First, President Trump announced today that he will pull the United States out of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, better known as the Iran nuclear deal.
I will sign a presidential memorandum to begin reinstating U.S. nuclear sanctions on the Iranian regime. We will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction. Any nation that helps Iran in its quest for nuclear weapons could also be strongly sanctioned by the United States. America will not be held hostage to nuclear blackmail.
The president signed that memorandum this afternoon, calling the original 2015 agreement one-sided and, quote, defective at its core, end quote. The decision to pull the U.S. out of the multinational agreement could have far-reaching implications, including with our allies that helped negotiate the deal, and it could color future diplomatic talks with Iran. Our next guest is here to help us understand what happened with the Iran deal today and its place in our history of nuclear anxiety since the end of the Cold War. Stephen Simbala is a distinguished professor of political science at Penn State Brandywine. He's written a number of books on nuclear weapons and diplomacy, including Nuclear Weapons in the Information Age. Steve, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hello.
Well, what are your thoughts on this decision, this announcement from the president earlier today?
Well, I think it's disappointing. The JCPOA was, I think, an important diplomatic accomplishment. It gave us not only an ongoing access to what Iran is doing with respect to its nuclear activities, but it also was endorsed by the entire permanent members of the UN Security Council, plus Germany and the European Union. So we've stepped back from solidarity with our allies on this issue. The British, the French, the Germans have already expressed their dismay. We've also got some people scratching their heads wondering if we can be trusted to keep our word in international agreements. And, you know, the our ability to get Iran to do what we want in the future may be compromised by this move rather than improved. That is to say, we may actually have less control over the situation than and maneuver ourselves into a position where if the agreement fully dissolves, Iran goes full tilt into enrichment, then we'll head down a path where we'll hit a fork in the road. Either Iran becomes a nuclear weapons state, or we have to go to war to prevent it. That's a box we really don't want to be in. So I think that if the agreement needed fixing, then we should have tried to negotiate to improve it instead of just walking away from it, especially walking away from it unilaterally. That doesn't make any sense diplomatically. And not having inspectors in there gives us less information and less intelligence about what Iran is really doing, as opposed to more. So it's a head scratcher for me, I think, in terms of why now, why this.
And the president and his newer national security advisor, John Bolton, had said the agreement really didn't do anything. It didn't do enough effectively to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. It had a sunset provision where when it ended, they wanted it to go on longer, in effect, to keep Iran from processing nuclear fuel. They were worried about Iran as a bad actor in the Mideast and beyond when it came to support for terrorism. Are these things that should have been concerns that should have been integrated into this deal?
The concerns about Iran as a bad actor are well-motivated. They have been a state sponsor of terror. They are an existential threat to Israel. They are potential axis of conflict in the broader Middle East, the conflict between Sunnis and Shiites. And, you know, but having said that, the question becomes then, how do you go about maximizing your influence in a way that gives you control of the situation as opposed to the Iranians? And, you know, you don't want to encourage more nuclear proliferation in the Middle East. I mean, that's we already have a situation in North Asia with North Korea. Looks like we're making some political progress there. Ironically, who thought at this time in 2018, I mean, a year ago, who would have imagined that we would be in good shape with negotiations on North Korean nuclear program and walking out on an agreement we had signed with the Iranians, and indeed the international community had signed with the Iranians. And, you know, there are reasons to hope that the regime in Iran would behave in a better way with respect to support for terrorism, with respect to, frankly, the way it treats many of its own people, with respect to the activities of its more hawkish factions in the regime. But the way you improve Iran's domestic and foreign policy behavior is by increasing your leverage over them. And I think that walking out of this agreement gives us less leverage. And then slapping sanctions on, this will only make constructive negotiations more difficult. It will alienate the regime further. It will empower the hawks in Tehran. And we will be standing alone, except perhaps with Israel, on the political issue about how to deal with the risk of non-proliferation in Iran and in this region.
We're talking to Stephen Simbala from Penn State Brandywine, distinguished professor of political science there. He's written multiple books on nuclear weapons and diplomacy. And Steve, you've thought and written a lot since the end of the Cold War about nuclear proliferation and how we stop it. In some ways, back in the day, we thought Cold War is over. We don't have this threat of nuclear war. In some ways, though, things have gotten more complicated. How have you seen the international community addressing these issues in the last, 25 years or so?
Well, the good news is that many of our worst fears weren't confirmed. The nuclear weapons, I think it was John Kennedy, when he was president, worried that as many as 20 or 30 countries might have nuclear weapons, even in the Cold War years. That hasn't happened. We've probably had less nuclear proliferation than we deserve, and we can be thankful for that, but I think shows that the non-proliferation treaty and other things that we and other countries have done has been helpful in restraining the number of states that have become nuclear weapon states. The problem, however, is that in the 21st century, we have a variety of forces that are pushing. The problem in the Cold War was, pretty much the United States and the Soviet Union, and they're building up large arsenals, sort of vertical proliferation, and trying to keep that from getting out of control. And now it's more a question of horizontal proliferation, with nuclear weapons spreading to more countries. And we already have in Asia a dangerous situation with China, India, Pakistan, Russia, North Korea, all nuclear powers. And we don't want to see something like that happen in the Middle East. That would be bad news for containing the spread of nuclear weapons and technology related to nuclear weapons. So we've moved from a Cold War situation where you had a dangerous situation, but one that was simple to understand, a U.S.-Soviet global rivalry supported by their nuclear weapons and nuclear power. And now we have a less clearly structured situation that's, for the reasons we're seeing right now, more challenging to manage.
I want to talk about the motivations for some countries like Iran, maybe North Korea, too, in wanting nuclear weapons. It seems like one thought process might be, hey, we don't want to end up being the next Saddam Hussein, overthrown by outside powers, Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, overthrown with the help of outside powers. If we have a nuclear weapon, that's a deterrent. And in Iran may be thinking, well, Israel has this officially unacknowledged but widely believed nuclear presence itself. Why don't we have something to balance that? Can you talk about those motivations for why the countries we're worried about want these nuclear weapons?
Yeah, that's an especially interesting question, and there's no if you're North Korea and you're looking at what happened to Saddam Hussein and you're looking at what happened to Muammar Gaddafi and you're thinking, well, you know, then the only way we can prevent somebody, the United States, trying regime change against North Korea is to make sure that we have at least a small number of nuclear weapons. That's a reasonable, unfortunate inference on their part, which is why, by the way, I think we had better be realistic about our objectives in negotiating with North Korea. I see talking heads on TV already demanding that the United States should insist on, you know, comprehensive, verifiable, irreversible dismantlement, the whole takedown of North Korea's entire nuclear weapons capability. But I'm doubtful that North Korea is going to put that on the table right up front. After all, for the reason you just mentioned, their nuclear weapons are, in their view, an insurance policy against the takedown of their regime. So that's going to take, we may have to go for something more limited in terms of dealing with North Korea. And as for the Middle East, there's absolutely a large risk here that if Iran becomes a declared nuclear weapon state or a de facto nuclear weapon state, then others will almost certainly follow. What happens then? What does Turkey do? What does Egypt do? What does Saudi Arabia do? And then one can hardly imagine a more combustible situation than a Middle East multipolar nuclear system.
We're talking to Stephen Simbala right now, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Penn State Brandywine, with us to talk about the Iran nuclear deal and nuclear proliferation since the Cold War, really. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the president's announcement today, violating the agreement with Iran and other countries, reimposing sanctions on Iran in spite of the Iran nuclear deal? What do you think the world community should be doing to prevent nuclear weapons proliferation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the spread of nuclear weapons in light of President Trump's announcement that the U.S. would pull out of the Iran nuclear deal. Stephen Simbala is with us, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Penn State Brandywine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the U.S. pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal? What does it mean for the North Korea negotiations along the way? Call 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Steve is with us in Madison. Steve, hi.
Hi. I guess you just mentioned my biggest concern, which is we finally are apparently getting a breakthrough with North Korea, and just what kind of signal does this send? I mean, how can North Korea ever expect that we're going to stand by any deal that we make with them to control their nuclear weapons, or how can any other country at this point take us seriously when we break our word like this?
Steve, thanks for the call. Steve Simbala, if the U.S. leaves the Iran deal, can North Korea, can other countries count on us on future deals?
That's a very good point. John Bolton, I see, is quoted here as saying that another aspect of the withdrawal decision was to establish a position of strength for the United States, and it will have implications for the dealing with North Korea. Sends a very clear signal that the U.S. will not accept inadequate deal. Well, that's his version of it, but I think your caller has just made the opposite point, which is it may raise questions about our credibility in following through on commitments we've made.
Thanks a lot for that call. Iran, it sounds like, is looking to negotiate with the other signatories to this agreement, U.S. allies like France, Germany, and the U.K., also Russia. I think China, too, was part of this deal. Will the deal remain significant even if the U.S. isn't playing along anymore?
Well, that's very complicated. The Iranians are, as you say, they've made a public statement that they want to continue to work with the other signatories and keep the deal in place. On the other hand, they're also making threats to resume enrichment, full tilt. So it's not quite clear where they're going to go with this. The Europeans definitely want to continue with the JCPOA, and it's not clear if and how this will affect what we're doing and saying with North Korea. So there's a great deal of, for sure, a great deal of uncertainty has been introduced into the non-proliferation equation by this decision.
We heard from John in Madison, who wants to know, how effective can U.S. sanctions be if Iran is trading with other U.S. allies? And that's part of the deal with these sanctions, is it punishes countries that, at least in some ways, trade with Iran. The president specifically said that help with Iran's nuclear ambitions, but it isn't clear that the sanctions would stop there. So what does the sanction regime now mean for not just Iran, but for its trading partners, including U.S. allies?
The sanctions regime will be weaker if, you know, the allies are not cooperating, if the United States is going it alone on sanctions. The sanctions worked to get to the JCPOA precisely because we had unanimity, especially among the major economic and military powers. And now that we're going in one direction and the rest of the signatories to the JCPOA seem to be going in another direction, there's only so much the United States can do unilaterally. There will doubtless be leakage if we're going it alone with sanctions.
Let's bring on another caller now. We have Steve with us in Sussex. Steve, hi.
Yes, I just wanted to say that, you know, over the last couple of days, I've heard that Iran has been developing their nuclear weapons program and all this. So it's like they're not holding up their part of the bargain either. So why should we?
Steve, thanks for that call. Steve Simbala, the president had referred to Iran lying to us, but he may have been referring to the Israeli presentation saying that Iran had misled the international community before the agreement. Do we have evidence that Iran is not following the terms of the agreement since it was signed?
Well, you know, the Israeli presentation, I think, is very controversial. The U.S. Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense, in their most recent statements on this subject, said that, as far as they know, Iran is in full compliance with the requirements of the agreement.
Thanks a lot for that call, Steve. We heard from Reza, who wanted to know why no one ever brings up how many nuclear weapons Israel has in this conversation. Why do they get a pass? As I understand it, Steve, Israel doesn't say they do have nuclear weapons. They're not really saying they don't. What do we know about that, and how does that affect other countries in the Middle East and their ambitions to develop nuclear weapons?
Well, and in addition to that, Israel and Iran are, of course, in a number of political confrontations that could spill over into a military confrontation. So, yes, that's Israel became a nuclear power very early. In the Cold War years, and is sort of been grandfathered in, as it were, as a de facto nuclear weapon state, even though, as you say, their declaratory policy is that they neither confirm nor deny that they have nuclear weapons.
So are they getting a pass, in effect, as Reza is saying?
Yeah, in a sense, although, you know, we've all lived with this now for decades, and you know, they also, I think, get a pass because they're a close ally of the United States, and, you know, we tend to count on them to carry a lot of our political water in the Middle East. They're very reliable allies. They're a democracy, and, you know, there's a lot of domestic political support for the state of Israel in the United States, and, you know, American administrations, Republican and Democratic, have both been supported Israel on defense issues.
Let's take one more caller. Todd is with us in Green Bay. Todd, hi.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I'm sorry.
Sure.
One thing about your last point is I don't think Israel, one of the reasons why Israel, I feel better about them at least having weapons, is that they've never threatened to blow anybody off the face of the earth when other nations have threatened to do that to Israel. But my point for calling was, what was, I just wanted to ask your guest, what was actually in this deal for us? My understanding is that we were given promises that they would discontinue their nuclear ambitions, but we also were not allowed to in there to go and check for ourselves. I guess we were relying on our proxies to do that for
Todd,
us.
Todd, thanks for the call. Just very briefly, Steve, we're just about out of time. What kind of access did we or the international community get to Iranian possible nuclear programs?
The JCPOA provides for inspections by international inspectors, the IAEA. And those inspections are, inspections may or may not be foolproof, but the point is you have inspectors in there, they're looking around, and they not only get you technical information, they also get you valuable intelligence about what's going on in the country as a whole. So you're getting all kinds of useful information.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to Stephen Cimbala, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Penn State Brandywine, talking about the Iran nuclear deal and nuclear proliferation issues around the world.